Welcome to a very special edition of The Issue Is. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, the world leaders of the Western Hemisphere came to Los Angeles, California, for the Summit of the Americas. 21 different heads of state here, all talking with each other, hosted by the President of the United States, who came here, along with the Vice President of the United States, the Secretary of State, the Governor of California, the Mayor of Los Angeles, all of them here. For several days of meetings to talk about issues like climate and migration and others. And so it gave us an opportunity to get FaceTime with some of the most important people in our government. We had a long sit-down with the governor of California after we spent time with him and Justin Trudeau, the Canadian prime minister. They signed a joint agreement on climate. I sort of joked that they look like they could be brothers. Justin Trudeau joked that he was the younger brother in that. And we talked with Governor Newsom about the summit, about his reelection this week, the primary that he won. We talked about big issues like crime, the DA's race, the LA mayor's race. We talked about the state of the Democratic Party and his frustration on it. Some of those comments already going viral online. And we talked about sort of where he goes from here. It was a really interesting conversation. It went longer than I thought it would. And so here, the advantage of the podcast is we can play the whole thing, including a lot of stuff that we had to cut for time on TV. So a little bit later, we're going to hear from the vice president and then the second gentleman of the United States. What a crazy packed show. But now, here's the governor of California, Gavin Newsom. Governor Newsom, welcome back to The Issue Is. Great to see you.
It's good to be back.
I think it's been 6 months since we've done this. This is our longest break.
Long for us.
It's true. So it's good to have you back. So here we are at the Summit of the Americas. Yeah. You know, California, obviously on the world stage, hosting this for the first time.
Yeah.
California, though, isn't a country, even though it's bigger than many of the countries that are here. Where do you see California's place in all this and it's sort of its place in the world?
Yeah, I joked when introducing Prime Minister Justin Trudeau that he needs to help us get into the G7 because we're the fifth largest economy in the world, $3.36 trillion a year economy, the most diverse state in the world's most diverse democracy. And we play an essential role as it relates to the Americas, particularly as it relates to that diversity here in Southern California, which is well established. And it's a point of pride living in a state, it's a majority minority state. In a state that's truly universal in terms of, I think, our values. And so appropriate that the Summit of Americas, North America, Central and South America, have convened here. And it's appropriate that we highlight the strength of those relationships historically, strength of those relationships as it relates to families, and strengths as it relates to our economic opportunities moving forward.
And part of this, of course, the president comes here in town. You met him at Air Force One with your kids.
Yeah,
quite a bring your kids to work day.
Yeah, I finally am that, a cool dad.
What was that like? What did he say to them? What did they say to him?
Well, he was exactly what you'd expect him to be, which is beyond gracious. And I got to tell you, it was one of those interesting. When I got in the car, I was talking to my staff. I said, you know what? If I hear anyone attack the character of the President of the United States anymore, I just can't take it. This is one of the most decent, honorable human beings. Again, forget politics. Just as a human being connecting with other people and knowing how important it is to connect to someone's kids. And he took all the extra time in the world, said all the right things, and the kids are on cloud nine. And it's not just my kids. You see that with him. You've seen that over his entire career. But yeah, look, that was a thrill. Got him out of going to Disneyland. I figured maybe Air Force One would be, and that was hard to do.
I know, Splash Mountain's pretty great though.
All right, so legit. So I still have to make up for that, but it wasn't a bad backup.
Yeah, but I know in the past we've talked, you even brought them into the room when you talked with President Trump in the past because you wanted them to see sort of this interaction.
Yeah.
Right?
No, I mean, I want them to respect, you don't have to agree with people, but you have to respect them. I remember we had a very good working relationship with President Trump. I mean, that's not an easy thing for a Democrat to say. Few would even acknowledge it, if right. even true, but that's important. And, you can disagree, and we've taken shots. President Trump used to take shots, bloody. We went back and forth on Twitter and the like, but at the end of the day, you got to figure out ways of working together. And I think, look, right now, everybody's finding crowbars to put in the spokes, the wheel of the other party, and we're just tearing each other down at a point where, really, the anxiety is boiling, and you're seeing it boiling over. Obviously, you saw that on January 6th. We've seen that in terms of the midterms coming up, and you're feeling the even here, let's be honest, with the Summit Americas, who showed up, who didn't show up, who returned calls, who didn't return calls. It's a tough time, and I think we have to take time to be a little more empathetic and other people oriented.
And in the midst of all of that, we have elections here as well. You had an election this week.
Yeah.
Didn't even have an election watch party. What was that decision
about? I won't even
about?
Tell you what I was doing when the polls closed. No, exactly. I was by myself. Working just on my emails and working a little bit on the budget. It was a surreal thing.
I mean, is that weird? Why that decision?
Well, I guess we got a budget we got to get done next week. But also, there's nothing you can do on election day. And it's awkward to celebrate at halftime. I mean, it's June. And one thing I know in politics, November is a lifetime away. It's not just a few months away. In political terms, so much can change. So humility, get to work, focus, especially when you're incumbent. It's a very different thing. And so we watched closely, and I just want to congratulate a lot of folks that were in races that came short, folks that won in assembly, Senate races, local school board races. It was disappointing to see the turnout, particularly because we made it so easy to vote, even providing people stamps so they don't have to pay for the return of the ballot. But hopefully in November, that will change.
Are you going to debate Brian Dahle?
I didn't even, honestly, literally, it's interesting you ask. I haven't even thought about that. You've just asked that question, I assume.
Yes.
At some point, I think that's a requirement of sorts in terms of tradition and expectation. Yeah. Who knows, though?
I know you did a radio debate last time, but if you want to do a TV debate, we're happy,
Here it is. Here's the official invite.
Let's talk about some of the other results of this week. Of course, you used to be the mayor of San Francisco. You know that community so well.
Yeah.
The Chesa Boudin recall. What do you think is the message that voters are sending to everybody when it comes to crime with that recall?
I mean, that was so predictable, particularly after the school board recall. I've enjoyed it. Look, I'm fourth generation, my kids, fifth generation San Franciscans. Grew up in political terms there as a county supervisor before I became mayor, and worked with a number of different DAs. And I had the privilege of growing up in a city where I've understood the ebb and flow of the politics. Nothing about that was surprising, and none of it about that was particularly warranted the attention nationally as some arbiter of something farther reaching. I thought it was the punditry was a little overwhelming on it. I think, though, the issue in San Francisco in particular is people want the streets cleaned up. Period, full stop, enough. They want the streets cleaned up. They want a sense of order from the disorder they're feeling on the streets. Now, crime's a component of that, but there's a lot of conflation of those issues. The mental health issues out there, the open drug use, not just drug dealing, the dirtiness of parts of the city, not the vast majority of the city, if you're still bucolic and extraordinary, but there are components that have grown. It's now more prominent, the challenges, than they've been in the past. And Teg, the DA, was it, meaning there was some attachment of accountability and responsibility. It's felt by everybody up there, all the electeds, but in particular, the district attorney.
But doesn't the Democrats bear some responsibility for that? I mean, you guys have been in charge there forever.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But forever we haven't, I mean, we've had issues up there, but they haven't been as intense as some of the issues that have manifested. But that being said, there's cities all across the country with those same issues. It's interesting is how focused we are on a number of California cities. I mean, there was just an analysis of the 65 cities with the highest murder rates. California had two cities, LA and San Francisco weren't even on the list. And 2/3 of the cities were in Republican states. I mean, you look at the murder rates in the United States of America. This is not to abdicate any of our responsibility here in California. We own it, and we have to take responsibility for doing more better. But what is going on with the red state murder problem in America? 8 of the top states with the fastest growing murder rates in America, Republican states, really 9 when you consider one of those two happens to be Georgia. That's a fact. You look at places like Bakersfield, California. Kern County is the murder capital of California, Kern County. Republican sheriff, Republican DA, Republican mayors, Kevin McCarthy's backyard. Mm-hmm. But that's not what you're seeing on the nightly news. It's a surround sound hit on one or two iconic San Francisco, LA, California cities. And it's right to focus on where we need to improve. That's a fact. Mm-hmm. But it's not necessarily unique and distinctive, because we're seeing the manifestation of these same challenges all across the country as well.
And of course, crime at the heart of the LA mayor's race as well. Do you have a favorite in that race? Rick Caruso, Karen Bass?
They've been friends. I mean, I hate, like, what do I say? Like, full disclosure, nothing worse than hearing a politician in your interview say, I have two friends in the race. I actually have known Rick for years. He was on our economic development task force that we created during COVID and was incredibly helpful and supportive of our efforts at state level. Karen Bass, we've all known for decades, and she's been a remarkable leader going back well before my time, even in politics. And so I have deep respect for both of them, and I've not gotten involved in that race, or at least race as it relates to the race today or even prior to the primary.
We had both of them on the last 2 weeks, and I said to both of them how kind they've been to us as well.
Yeah.
So I feel you
and,
on
and
that.
I'll, but and I'll say one thing on a serious note related to the previous question, too. One thing I am very pleased with, and this is really important from my humble perspective, is they both are big, avid supporters of our care court construct. And this is the most significant opportunity to transform our mental health system in our state, quite literally in half a century. The opportunity to work past these old binaries around LPS and Laura's Law and what we can do about people that are bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, paranoia out in the streets and sidewalks, self-medicating, and there's inability to do anything about it. Now we will have the tools. We're just a few weeks away from landing a deal with the legislature on that. And I'm really grateful for both of them for having the courage, because it took courage to early on come out and support it. And it's indicative of the issue that's defining the race here in LA, but I think defines a lot of races in California. And that's, again, addressing what's happening on our streets. It's unacceptable. We need to clean up our streets. We need to clean up our act in terms of accountability and responsibility to get these tents off the street, but do it thoughtfully, do it within the framework of the values we hold dear. It's not just out of sight, out of mind. New tools, new strategies, new agenda, and we'll have the opportunity to work with some new mayors and new DAs across the state, and I'm looking forward to it.
And for some people that may not be in the weeds, when he talks about care court, he's talking about a system to make it easier for people that need treatment out on the street but have refused it to get family members, social workers, other people involved to help get them the treatment that they need.
Yeah.
Let's talk about another big, well, you just mentioned the budget, and or you mentioned the legislative deal. Let's talk about the budget for a moment.
Yeah.
What's the deal with the gas tax rebate? Why hasn't a deal gotten done yet?
Well, we're just doing it in the context of the budget. And so in a few weeks, we'll quite literally get that done and we'll start processing those checks. The question is the size. Legislature has about an $8 billion proposal. I think it should be much higher. Ours is around $11.5 billion. I want those checks to go out faster. We have a process. We think we get the checks out faster. The enormity of the challenge, self-evidence, not just gas, it's rent and obviously food costs, inflation generally. It would be the single largest rebate, statewide tax rebate in U.S. history, even bigger than last year's $9 billion tax rebate, which was sizable. 2 years, $20 billion back to the people of the state of California, directly in their pockets, not in the pockets of oil companies, not in the pockets of corporations or even gas station owners. That's why our approach is a direct rebate that quickly gets back into people's pockets that we believe can get up to $600 in some cases, even higher in others.
Part of the reason you're able to do that is because you have a $100 billion surplus, which is great. I'm sure to be governor with that, because we've talked to the governors that dealt with the opposite and it wasn't as much fun.
No.
But is there some thought, though, that a $100 billion surplus is evidence that taxes are too high and that maybe we should do tax cuts, especially for maybe some of the businesses that have left this state? That have complained about California not being pro-business enough, that we shouldn't get to that big of a surplus?
Well, I think one can argue the merits or demerits of our tax system, which is particularly progressive. And obviously, those that have done well have done exceptionally well in the last few years, and that's reflected in our capital gains. That said, we're not naive. We just had a deficit a couple of years ago, likely to experience those once again, particularly as the economy cools and we see the impacts of inflation over an extended period of time and obviously Fed policy. That said, that's why we're building up our rainy day reserve to the highest levels ever. It's part of the disagreement I have with the legislature right now. They actually want to reduce the amount of money in our budget in terms of reserves. They actually don't want to do as big of a tax rebate as the one we are proposing. And they're proposing $6 billion of ongoing spending, which I don't believe we can afford in a few years. So we're going to have to pull that back. These are modest differences. They're big if they're not attended to, modest in terms of what I believe we will be able to close in the next week or so. But that said, I've always supported reforming our tax code, but it will require a Herculean effort. And it will require an effort that would ultimately have to land the voters who, as you know, extended the top tax rate in 2011. And will have to, it will sunset in a number of years, but we'll have to go back to the voters to eliminate. It's a progressive tax. That said, good years, we do extraordinarily well. Mm-hmm. Tough years, we've got to batten down the hatches, get those rainy day reserves up to prepare for those.
By the way, when we interviewed Governor Brown, he said your focus on short-term spending was the smartest thing you were doing.
I appreciate it. I mean, look, in my May revise, meaning the last budget that I submitted to the legislature, 99%, this is unprecedented, even during the Brown years, 99% of the surplus between January and May, we set aside for one-time purposes in order to maintain our fiscal discipline. You do not need to be profligate to be progressive, meaning we don't have to go back to the old tax and spend ways of Democrat and liberalism. We can do it differently. More is not better. I've never been one of those Democrats that more is better. Just spending money. Look at the issues around homelessness. Right. I mean, it's not just about money. It's about damn accountability. It's about doing your job, addressing what's happening on the street, owning it, taking responsibility. And that's the thrust of our approach, new accountability that was required this June. Literally this month, all of the local homeless plans are required to be submitted to the state of California. First time ever. You don't submit a plan, we don't give you any more money. Mm. We have to now start focusing on accountability. The people of LA deserve it, and people of California demand it.
Let's talk as well about the last time that we were together was right after that draft decision leaked on Roe v. Wade. Yeah. And you were as passionate as I've ever seen you talking about where the hell is my party? Yeah. And since then, the same could be said about guns. Where the hell is the National Democratic Party in terms of action on that? What's going on there?
I don't know.
Even since you talked about Roe, nothing has changed.
No, I mean, we're going to be moving forward affirmatively with a constitutional amendment, just codifying what we have in statute. But it's an organizing mechanism, and it's a way of at least affirming our position in the state. So we're going to take some leadership there. And on guns, as you know, we're doing this private right of action modeled after the Texas abortion right. model, which is a very aggressive step. And that should land on my desk in a matter of weeks. Mark my word, that is a significant initiative and effort that will have, we think, real consequences in terms of getting illegal guns off the street. All of that being said, what is going on in the Democratic Party nationwide? I cannot answer that question. And I pose that question out of frustration, reflection, and some parts of the Democratic Party were critical of that. But overwhelming response to that statement, I don't have an answer for you. And that's not Joe Biden. Joe Biden is not the head of the Democratic Party. I mean, he happens to be president of the United States. It's not his job to organize at all levels the Democratic Party. That's the Democratic Party's responsibility. And I don't want to take a cheap shot. It's not an individual gripe with anybody. It has nothing to do with Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer. They are not the heads of the party. As well, we have a Democratic Party. And yeah, where the hell are we as a party? To capture the narrative, to capture the imagination of the American people, you had a guy, Ron DeSantis, in Florida, that just went after the most vulnerable Americans, the Special Olympics, and he gets away with it. He's celebrated. Special Olympians. He's attacking the Special Olympics, not just Disneyland. What the hell is happening in this country? And I'll tell you, the only thing that could stop it is the Democratic Party. So yeah, as a Democrat, but also as a guy with four kids, I'm a little bit animated and intensely frustrated at this moment.
So what's your advice? And if those guys aren't the leaders of the Democratic Party, who is? Who are you
looking
for?
Well, we have a party.
Yeah.
There is something called the Democratic Party.
Right.
I've read about it.
Yeah.
And I've met a few of these people over the years. It's not even an indictment of the current leadership. It's time to organize, guys, bottom up, not just top down. Republicans have been organizing bottom up forever. They're organizing Secretary of State races all across this country. They're organizing state legislatures religiously. That's why in all these red states, they're converted. Most of the progress of the 21st century is being completely wiped out the last 50 years in the last 15 weeks in all these Republican states. So it's a really important and powerful moment in terms of I hope, waking us up to the world we're living in that goes well beyond just abortion and guns, but are punctuated by what's happening with guns or lack thereof, and obviously an issue of freedom of choice.
Two questions to wrap things up. First, on the drought. Where are we as a state, and who's to blame for this?
Well, I mean, Mother Nature, by definition. I mean, it's not unique. I mean, we're at the Summit of Americas. I was just talking to the foreign minister of Chile. It was one of the big issues is water scarcity all up and down, not just the Americas, but around the rest of the globe. And so with that in mind, we have moved forward with what we refer to as the mandate of mandates. You saw it here in Southern California on June 1st. They all went into effect. It's what we call level two plans, localized plans. And so now everybody is going to be facing different sanctions tailored to local hydrology, local conditions. What happens in the far northern reach of California is very different than what's going on in Imperial County, as an example, let alone here in LA or San Francisco. So we don't want a one size fits all if we can avoid that. And here's my point. If we don't see significant reductions in use, we're going to have to then move forward with a statewide overlay at scale, something most local water agencies are opposing. And we've given them room, not no one's to blame, but we've given them room to tailor their local responses. Most have gone into effect this month, June 10th. All of them went into effect, some, again, prior to the June 10th deadline.
And lastly, when we started The Issue Is 4 years ago, you were our first guest talking about the primary to run for governor of California, and to think about how different the world was 4 years ago and what a journey you have been on since. How do you even sort of comprehend this last 4 years? Nobody could have seen a lot of this stuff coming back then and sort of where we go
but
from
here. I think for all of us in our own lives, your own professional lives, anyone that's watching right now, I mean, I think that's a question we can all we all reflect on. I hope we reflect on, because I think it's important for us to reflect on that. I think one of the real challenges we have right now is people that aren't taking care of themselves, aren't being more reflective, aren't appreciating the journey they've individually been on. And I hope people take time and open up about that, because we all need to decompress. It's been incredibly challenging for years, stacking of crisis, stacking of stress. Mm-hmm. And those crises and stress are continuing to stack in so many different ways. That's why we, by the way, put up billions of dollars, the most comprehensive master plan for mental health, not just for what's happening on the streets, but for adolescent mental health. $4.5 billion for all our kids 0 to 25. Can't invest that money soon enough. People need to really take time, take stock to what they've been through. And I hope take care of themselves, because, you know, our politics is so corrosive, so divisive. If you're just sitting there watching the scroll, watching the nightly news every night, it can really bring you into a very dark place. And I hope folks get out of that if they're in that dark space by taking a moment and reflecting that their journey, while unique and distinctive, is a journey many of us have been on. And maybe just soften the edges in terms of the way we engage each other, but also how we take care of ourselves.
How do you find that space?
By talking to my staff about, I think talking about it more, talking about all of us just finding that space to, you know, I talk to my staff about just take time. Yeah. You know, you don't need to, guys, just take time. Your kids, you know, take the time. Everybody needs time. No one should apologize for asking for a few extra hours, a few extra days, a few extra minutes. Or can I just skip this? People just need to take some time. And if they don't, man, we've been on this treadmill the last few years and people are burning out. And, you know, and when it hits you hard. And, you know, we're resilient. The state's remarkably resilient. 7.8% GDP last year. So for all this California crack up, best days are behind us. More IPOs, more venture capital than any time in history last year. Wildly outperformed economically Texas last year. Outperformed places like Indiana and places like Florida. So I'm really excited about the future, but I hope we can get through the present and take care of ourselves and come out stronger on the other side.
Well, speaking of time, I'm out of time and way over time. So thank you for being generous with your time. Governor Gavin Newsom, thank you so
much.
Good
to be back with you.
Great to see you.
Our thanks to Governor Newsom. It is now time for the Vice President of the United States, who we got to spend some time with this week. Here's our story.
What does it mean for you to be at a summit like this in your home state as one of the leaders of it?
One of the important components of the summit, from my perspective, is the work that we've been doing with the call to action, which is bringing CEOs together at historic numbers to invest in the northern part of Central America. And we announced yesterday that as a result of the work that we only started a year ago, we've already raised $3.2 billion, which is about investing in these countries that are our neighbors as the United States, because we are also a member of the Western Hemisphere. And one of the things that is without question, when we are able to improve the prosperity and stability of our neighbors, we as a nation benefit.
Tell me about your work.
The vice president also touring the Dream Big Children's Center in Monrovia. Christina Cordero founded this spot in 2016, a space where kids with special needs can safely play.
The reason that I've been hearing about her work is not only because of what she does in such a loving way to help parents parent, but she did it through the pandemic when she, for just a short while, was, you know, under the threat that so many small businesses were of closing. And the parents that she serves were desperate to know that she would be able to stay open. And she did. And parents bring their children here 5 days a week for 4 hours a day. The parents of this community rely on the support that she gives their children throughout these early stages of their development. And if she had to close down, it would have had a profound, if not lifelong, impact on those children, much less their families. So I'm here to highlight the importance of our small businesses, because they do this out of love.
During this whirlwind week, VP has some familiar comforts.
Especially great to be here.
It's kind of nice that it just happens to be in Los Angeles where I live, so it's been nice to be home for a change.
From the vice president to her husband, now to the second gentleman of the United States, Doug Emhoff, and his experience at USC's Shoah Foundation. Here's our report.
The second gentleman of the United States, Doug Emhoff, came to his university, USC, where he went to law school, to talk about something he's really passionate about, countering hate, at the extraordinary Shoah Foundation.
Pincus, how did you survive?
How did I survive?
Yes.
I survived, I believe, because Providence watched over me.
Doug Emhoff speaks to an artificial intelligence version of a real-life man, Pincus Gutter, who survived 6 German concentration camps during World War II.
Good to see you, Alex. Good to see you again.
Emhoff talks about the experience exclusively with us.
You are literally having a real conversation, and you saw what I saw. We walked out literally thinking we were just with Pincus.
Later, Emhoff zooms with the flesh-and-blood version of Pincus, now in his 9th decade.
One of the most important aspects of survival is to overcome fear.
It's just incredible.
Hi, my name is Alex. What's your name?
Hello, my name is Pinchas Gutter.
Back in November 2019, we did one of the first stories on this technology, innovated by USC's Shoah Foundation, which is founded by director Steven Spielberg. Pincus, among the survivors recruited for the Dimensions and Testimony Project, each of them answering over 1,000 questions over 5 days in front of 100 cameras.
This is really the place where we welcome people.
This visit is personal for Emhoff, a USC law grad who happens to be the spouse of the vice president. He's both the first man and the first Jew in that role.
Being in this role, you get to do some amazing things, but to come back to my school, my hometown, and to experience the Shoah, the put together by Steven Spielberg and others, it's truly humbling.
The Shoah Foundation's Corey Street says the administration showing up here means a lot.
To have that kind of a platform here at USC is amazing.
Many of these testimonies here are about World War II, but it's not just World War II that they're focused on here. Recently, they've been collecting testimonies in Ukraine to help potentially the International Criminal Court.
Every day it feels like there's more and more manifestations of hatred.
It's history repeating itself. And as Pink has made clear, and as we all know, again, it's not just a Jewish issue. It's an issue for all of us. Hate rears its ugly head all over the world. And this exhibit here is part of that that aspect of just telling the truth. Here are people who actually survived this, telling their stories. Mm-hmm. And those stories are true.
If you want to talk to Pincus, you can. Just go to eyewitness.usc.edu and start your conversation.
our thanks to the second gentleman, the vice president, the governor of California, and we even got to see the president a couple times as well. What an incredible week here in California, one I will not soon forget. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back with more next week on The Issue Is. I'm Alex Michelson. See you next time.